Linda. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Mark, for inviting me to come here tonight. It's an honor and a privilege to do anything for Alcoholics Anonymous. Super grateful, just delighted to be here. And welcome to Taylor and Irene and Tina. And welcome, Mike, from Las Vegas. Really glad you're here, too. Great job, Cassie. I was sitting there tearing up. I remember that. And I was like crying and so proud. And, you know, she's just a joy in my life, and I have the honor and privilege to walk alongside her in our sobriety journey. So my sobriety date is June 2nd, 1999, and my sponsor's name is Sharon F. And I grew up in Lancaster, and that was my first resentment. Mexican-American family, and they were in Orange County, and then my mom met a dude, and then the dude wanted to live up here, and then we lived up here, and then all hell broke loose, and then you know how it goes. And but that's not why I'm alcoholic, but it is why I did crystal meth. No, I'm just kidding. So when I told Cassie, hey, we're going to Lancaster, and I said, we're early, we're going to take a little trip down memory lane. And she's like, why? This is my first apartment. And it's like, you know, it's over on West Avenue K for behind the Marabella. I think it was low-income housing back in 1989. You know, where I used to walk to Taco Bell and, like, hitchhike and try to get food and, you know, back then, and back in the day, I was so broke that I would, like, gather all my change and then, like, buy food for me and my kid. And so just coming back to Lancaster is, I was sharing with somebody last night. They said, life is lived forward, but we learn and we understand by looking back. And that's what's happened here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm 26 years sober. I came from this big Mexican-American family. My mom, Lupe, she's just a little shorty. She was so cute. You know, she's passed on now. She didn't know what was wrong with me. I was just a big drunk. I was a baby drunk. And I took that first drink of alcohol in Orange County with my Chola aunts. And they made me all Chola one night. And black eyeliner, red lipstick, and my hair was really high. And Aunt Becky said, don't smoke because we're going to hairspray our hair. And we want to catch on fire. And you know, that was my first night. We walked down to the park. It was hot. It was summer. I was 11. I thought I looked good. Like, my hair was so big. Like, what did they say? The higher the hair, the closer to God? I don't remember. And so we walked down to the park, and we had one six-pack of Budweiser beer to share between the three of us. And I guess they thought that was plenty. I don't know. They're not like me. But I ended up drinking three, and then they shared the other three, and then Cholo guys came in their lowrider, so we jumped right in, and they had more alcohol, and I just kept drinking, and it was so much fun. I was burping and hiccuping, and it was sloshing all around. I was sloppy, and I thought it was because I was new to drinking. And then the sun set, and then things got a little more intense, and we were still drinking, and the car was so low and so bumpy that, like, I started to feel like I was going to throw up. I didn't make it. It was half in the car, half out of the car. It splashed back in my 80s hair. I was like, oh, my God, this is so much fun. And that was my first night. It was fun. And I couldn't wait to do it again. I asked my Aunt Becky, can I go out with you guys again? And she said yes. And we did. And she said, but don't tell Grandma, because my Grandma Rosie was like a saint. She had 13 children, and all of them were drinkers or something. And my Uncle Judge, he was so fun, and he was always drunk, and I just thought he had bad luck. His name was Judgy because he always went before the judge, not because he looked like a judge. And that's my family. So she asked me to keep it a secret from my sweet little grandmother, and I said, no problem. Because I was living here on the east side with my family, and I grew up in an alcoholic home. So I was already keeping secrets. It was like a, you know, it was just like a way of life, keeping secrets. So that was my first night drinking. I liked the effect produced by that Budweiser. I wanted to party, like, all the time. So they shipped me back to Lancaster, and now I'm drinking. I'm hitchhiking on Sierra Highway. I'm trying to, like, get liquor from Avenue I. There's a liquor store, or there used to be a liquor store right on Avenue I. And I would stand out there until somebody would, a man, older, would buy us alcohol. I don't think any of them are here tonight. So that's what we used to do, because it was hard to get alcohol when you're that young, when you're 12, 13. And then I was going to AV High, and but I loved drinking. I loved to drink. I loved to party. If you ask me, hey, kid, do you want to party? I always said yes. You want to drink? Yes. So I started going to ditch parties, and I had this police officer, Officer Don. He lived across the street, and I babysat for him. And I remember the AV Fair was going on. I was super drunk at the AV Fair, and I was just a kid, and I ran away, started running away a lot. And he put me in the back of the police car. He found me. Somebody snitched me out, probably a normal person, a non-alcoholic. And he's like, kid, why do you do this? He's like, you're a good kid. You babysit my kid. I trust you. It can't be just like your family makes you do the dishes or watch your little brother. Like, I'm fine. I am fine. And so he took me back, and I had like that fear in my chest, and I couldn't express. Like, I'm afraid. I'm running the streets. I'm crazy. I'm wild. And I cannot stop. I don't want to do what I'm doing. I know better. I wasn't raised this way. I don't want to be out in the streets late at night. I'm only 13. Bad things happen to 13-year-olds when you're on the street hitchhiking on Sierra Highway with no protection. But I said, I'm cool. I'm good. And he just drove me back home, and then I ran away for good. And back then, it was so easy to get into my life. All you had to do was, like, roll up. Hey, you want to party? Yeah. So I jumped right in, and I told Cassie it was like a Trans Am, T-top Trans Am goal. I know, it's so sad. And anyway, I moved right in. He had everything, food, shelter, alcohol, drugs. It was a party. I moved right in. I should have been in high school. I wasn't. We had a little side job, and I was good at weighing and measuring. It was very successful, because we had a lot of referrals. And I drank my whole way through it. Now I'm 14. I should be a junior in high school. Anyway, and I was drinking orange juice and vodka in the morning, and wine coolers during the day, and Zima. Does anybody remember Zima?
Yes.
Zima. And then what happened was I got pregnant. I had to put the brakes on my drinking. I go to the guy, hey, we're having a baby. You're having a baby? Oh, my God. I'm like, what are we going to do? He's like, what are you going to do? And didn't go very well. The police found out. Somebody told the police, because I'm underage. He's way older. I know. It's just so Jerry Springer. But drinking made it all bearable. Right? And I was able to put the drink down for 9 months. I had my little son. And I just remember looking him in the eye saying, I'm going to be a good mom. I'm going to get my act together. I'm going to go back to school. I'm going to get a little job. Well, you know my story. I always drink. 2 weeks later, after he was born, I was drunk in the park over off of whatever, L, by the freeway. You can see from the freeway. I was over there in that park drinking with some guys. I don't remember who. So I decided that Lancaster was a problem, so I moved all the way from Lancaster all the way to Simi Valley. And it's just as windy and hot there, too. But I'm in my 20s now. And I get a little job. And I meet all the same people. And it's not the area. It's me. I'm the alcoholic. I always have to drink. I know better, but I can't do better. I want to be there for my son, and I'm not. I'm only going to have 2 drinks on a Tuesday night, ladies' night in the valley. I can't even do that. I got drunk. I had 1 drink. I felt tipsy. I fell off the bar stool. This guy catches me, and he's like, hi. And I said, you're the one. And bought me a drink. I can't move anything. Only thing that can move were my eyeballs. He took off with me. My friends came, and they're like, where are you going? They're screaming, where are you going? But if you look at us in the bar, it looked like I was leaving willingly with him. I was not. My feet were dragging on the ground. I came to the next morning, and it was apparent what had happened to me. It was a big mess. There's children in the room, so I won't go into detail. But I just remember thinking in my mind where the illness is centered, I just wanted 2 beers or 2 drinks. I just wanted a couple of, just chill. I only brought in $20, and I don't get home till the next day. And when he released me and let me go, I drove home, I walked in, I looked at what I could hide, like the bruises and stuff, and what did I do? I went straight to the refrigerator to get another drink. And it did not occur to me, this is what I said, I have to stop going to Mexican bars in the valley because it's just not safe. You know what I mean? Not, I should stop drinking altogether. No, we started going to Irish pubs and drinking beer, and I got really chubby. All my homies, all my girlfriends and I did. And that was my solution. Go to Irish pubs and stop drinking tequila, those two things. So obviously I did not stop drinking because that's not going to stop me. Drinking shoves all that stuff down, right? All those terrible memories, it shoves them. And I can't tell anybody because nobody understands. So now I'm drinking, I'm going to happy hour, I'm driving, I'm just doing all these things. So this is what I thought in my mind where the illness is centered. You know what? I'm just going to move to a different place. I'm going to get a better job. And I did. And I had this little coworker guy. And he's like, we should move in together because you're a single parent. I'm a single parent. And we could save money on rent. And I said, yeah, that's a great idea. And all I thought was a free babysitter so I can drink how I really want to drink. And I could save money. And so I did that. And I was drinking all the time, going to Mexico, dancing on bars and tables and fell down. I mean, I was just so clumsy. They used to call me Gracie when I was out there because I was so clumsy. But what happened for me is that loneliness and despair, I just couldn't drink that away anymore. I couldn't pretend. Sometimes I would go into blackout and sometimes I wouldn't, and sometimes I would have 2, 3, 4, 8 drinks and then I wouldn't feel anything. Do you ever drink yourself clear where like your body, you should be really drunk but the mind just keeps talking? That's what happened to me. So this coworker roommate came down the stairs during summer without a shirt on and just some shorts, and I remember seeing him. I was like, oh my God, thank God we're just roommates because I would never go out with you. And then when we got married a short time later... My drinking really took off, and so moving, having children didn't keep me sober, making promises didn't keep me sober, moving from one city to the other, getting married didn't keep me sober, and I like, now I'm married. It was so hard to be as terrible. I tried to be a good wife, I was not a good wife. He reported me missing one time because I went out with my friends and I didn't come home for like a long time. I told him, you don't do that. You don't call the police and summon them. You don't tell them anything. What are you doing? Like, so, anyway, so that was his fault. What else? And I really did the best that I could. I didn't know I was an alcoholic. I didn't know I was powerless over alcoholism. I knew better, but I couldn't do better. Even when I made promises, even I said, I'm gonna do it this time. I promise I'm only gonna go to that bar and then I'm gonna come home. And then I call it 11, 12, 1, almost 2. And then I just stop calling because I don't want them to get mad at me. The end came for me when I was in Las Vegas on Mother's Day. With my friends, and I would take off my wedding ring and I would lie and say my name was Sarah, and I would boogie and dance all night, and I would just lie and say my name was Sarah. And my friends were gone, and it was just me and my new best friend Sparkles dancing together. Sparkles said, why don't we go to this other bar, because we were out of money and we needed somebody, a man, to buy us some alcohol. And we found one, and he was tall and dark, but he was not handsome from my recollection. And he had a hat with a feather in it and a fur coat. And a medallion necklace bigger than our little chip thing. And he said, hey, Sarah, you want a drink? You want a party? And I said, yes, I did. His date got mad. She threw a drink in my face. I was like, vodka tonic, I'll have that. And he's like, let's get out of here. And so we got in his car, and here I am in a car with another stranger. And up until this time, I had already been hearing voices. And they were so loud, they would say things like, you're not worth it, you'll never be good enough, you might as well just end it, you know, it's never going to get better, you're just a loser, you're a big zero, nobody loves you anyway. But that night, it had something good to say. It said, then to get out of the car and run, and it grabbed my shirt collar. It felt like it grabbed my shirt collar. And then I got out of the car. He was already in the liquor store. And my experience is, I think you guys prayed me in. I didn't know anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know when we hold hands at the end and we pray for that still suffering alcoholic in and out of the rooms of AA? That was me. I don't know how I got here. I mean, I know now, only looking back. But when I was running for my life again, it was something else. It's like that feeling that you get in the room and it's really quiet and we're all sitting here together on a Sunday night in the presence of a higher power. I call it God. Here to help me. Brought me to you guys. I went running. I was sloshing. I had passed out at the Hard Rock Hotel pool. It happens, and then they think you're dead by accident. You're not. You're just a little cooked and sunburned. It's okay. And my roof of my mouth was sunburned, my armpit, and I had no money. I found my hotel. He was not chasing me. I thought I was having a hallucination. Nobody was chasing me. He was probably like, woo, got rid of her. And I called my husband. I looked up, and I was 45 pounds heavier, and I was so sloshy because I drank like almost that big handle from Costco of Tanqueray gin. I almost drank that all weekend, and so I called my husband to fly me home. I was married still, and I asked him to fly me home, and he asked me what happened, and I said, the girls stole my money, and they left me here in Las Vegas. He's, Las Vegas, that's why I remembered where you were from. He's like, what? You have terrible friends. I'm like, yeah, they are the worst. Fly me home. This is when you could meet your family at the gate, and there he was at the gate. He never showed up for anything, and there he was at the gate today, that day. Anyway, I couldn't look him in the eye. I already told you. They took my money, and they left me here, and he wasn't buying it. I had the shakes. I was jaundiced by this time. My stomach was distended. My hair was falling out. I wasn't eating, I was just drinking all the time. And so he took me to my car, and I was just gonna crash my car into the pillar on the freeway and just end it. And I was only 28 years old, and I was like, I was so done. Couldn't figure this thing out. I couldn't figure out why I felt the way I felt and why I always drank, and how come I couldn't stop? I wasn't really trying, but one of the two times I did, I didn't. And I looked in the rearview mirror, he was following me, so I couldn't do it. And I went home, and my children were there at the door. They were trying to hug me and wish me Happy Mother's Day, and I pushed them off, and I said, Mommy's sick. And I remember him saying, your mom's really, really sick. And I went upstairs to call this woman. And this is the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. This woman and I went to a play 2 weeks before. And I said, why don't we get a drink before the play in Hollywood, because it's hot. And I'm thirsty. And she said, oh no, I can't have one beer. One's too many and a thousand's not enough. And I said, what kind of hell math is that? It's one beer. And she's like, no, I can't drink no matter what. I'm an A&A. For me to have one is to drink and die. And I thought, God, this girl's so dramatic. I felt so bad. So I didn't drink either, and I just sat there like so mad and sweaty, and I told you what I used to drink, Tanqueray gin, and it was coming out of my pores, and even though I took showers, she could smell it on me. And so she's the gal that I called, and I told her, I just got back from Vegas, and I was hanging out with this pimp, and my husband wants to know what's happening. He doesn't believe me. And she's like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you called. That happens all the time in AA. You'll fit right in. I was like, really? Because I never fit in anywhere, really. And that's when my whole life changed like that. I'm drinking with the pimp in Las Vegas one day. The very next day, I am at home going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous 26 years ago in almost one month, 26 years ago in 27 days. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. She was an attraction. This is what she said. that day at the play, I thought she must take a shower every day because she's so shiny, right? She was like glowing. Her hair, her skin, her eyes, they were all white. Remember, I'm yellow and smelly. So, and then she said she would go to work after that meeting, and then she goes to work, and then she stays there the whole day. Wow, I was impressed. So she asked me to not drink that day, and I said, I don't have to drink that every day. I just drink every day because I want to. And then she asked me, can I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And I said, okay, of course. And I didn't really want to, but I went 2 days later, and then I went. They were really nice. They were standing outside. They were smoking cigarettes, drinking coffee, laughing. And I thought, why are they so happy? And then they asked me if I was new, and I said, no, I'm not new to the area. And I had no idea what they were asking. But I was bloated, crying, and, you know, sunburned. They were like, are you sure you're not new? And they sat me down. It was a small meeting, maybe 12 people, maybe 15, I don't remember. But each person raised their hand and they said, I'm so-and-so, I'm an alcoholic. And each person shared about their first year of sobriety. And then by the time it got to me, I burst into tears and I said, I'm Linda and I'm an alcoholic. And they said, yay, we knew you were new. And they tried to give me a big book and a 12 and 12. And I just said, no, I'm just checking it out. A meeting directory, and I said, no, Tamara says I don't have to, you know, I don't have to get any books. Is Tamara your sponsor? And I said, no one is paying me to be here. I came here by myself. And this little guy, Ralph, with red hair, he looked like a leprechaun. He was really short with shocking red hair and a green shirt, little tiny shorts. He was super cute, and then he said this. He's like, listen, this is when you're allowed to do this to newcomers. Listen, kid, you're going to take this book and you're not going to tell me no, and you're going to go to this meeting on Wednesday. And the only reason why I did it was because he had this big bulbous nose with a red vein going through it. I thought if I keep drinking, I'm going to look like him. I was scared. So I went. The little book was the 24-hour-a-day book. I still have it today. And that began my journey in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened for me, my whole life changed. Like, overnight, I know, I hear people say, talk about slow sobriety, and I get that. Sometimes it's really slow, but I have to, like, really, I have to appreciate the power of Alcoholics Anonymous and the power of love and God and the unconditional love in the rooms, because those people carried such a strong message to me that it didn't matter where I come from, where I've been, and what doesn't matter what I thought, that I still had a chance. If I just keep coming back, everything will be okay. That's what they said. So I did. Tamara took me through my first 12 steps that year. At that Wednesday meeting, I met Rebecca, and I just talked to Rebecca today. She's my spiritual mentor. She's one of my closest, fiercest women in AA. Like, she is so strong. She's been there for me. She's been in my corner for 26 years and 27 days. She's walked me through every fear, every death, every divorce. Okay, there's only one, but it was still hard. Sorry. Divorce. Oh my God, these women in Alcoholics and men in Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm forever grateful for the people that have gone before me, because I remember in my first year I would tell Rebecca, you know, Rebecca, I think I need pills. Everybody's taking pills. How come I can't take pills? And she's like, why are they taking pills? I go, I don't know, but they tell me they are. She's like, who are these people? I go, I don't remember their names. And she's like, well, why do you think you need medication? Like, well, let's talk about this. Like, she was so prudent, and I said, well, I can't sleep. I have panic attacks, and I just feel terrible. She's like, well, yeah, your whole life was shitty. Of course you're going to feel terrible. And if you're thinking about yourself all day, of course you're going to have a panic attack. And how much coffee are you drinking? I'm like, only 3 or 4 cups at night at the meeting. She's like, of course you're not going to be able to sleep. How about we just do the 12 steps out of the big book? And then, if you still feel like it, then you can. And of course, by the third step, I didn't feel like it, because I stopped drinking coffee, I got some commitments, and she said, if ever I can't sleep, all you have to do is go to any page in the big book and you'll fall right to sleep. And you know what? She was right. It's true. Try it. So that was Rebecca, and my life the first year was upside down like a roller coaster. At 60 days, I got a chip, and everyone was so happy in the family, and then I came home, and all my clothes were on the porch, just like a Jerry Springer show, and like my chonies. Everything was out there. My husband's like, I can't believe you. What is this? He found my writing on my step work writing, so if you're writing, hide your stuff. And he was kicking me out, and I'm like, wait a second, I can't go anywhere and make any major decisions until I talk to the sponsor lady. And he's like, what? I'll be right back. So I ran upstairs, and I told her, I go, he's kicking me out, what do I do? And she's like, do you have anywhere to go? No. Do you have any friends? No. Do you have any money? No. And then she said, okay, you're going to go downstairs and tell him you'll be staying. I said, okay, I can do that. So I walked downstairs, and he was looking in the fridge, and the kids were crying. It was a scene. The dog was barking, right? And I said, okay. And he's like, well, and he turned around. He was really mad, and I said, Tamara said, I'll be staying. I got to do what she says. And I got to stay, and when I turned a year, and then he said that he wanted his old life back, and he wanted his old wife back. And I couldn't do that. I couldn't be that drunk girl anymore. So that relationship didn't end up working out. But here's where AA and the power of the 12 steps came in. With or without a man, I could still stay sober. With or without a job, because I've been there too, with or without money. It really is dependent on my relationship with God and then how much I give back to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's it. AA only requires just a few things: the 12 steps, meetings, calling your sponsor every day, working with others, driving to Lancaster on a Sunday. No, I'm just kidding. One time I was feeling very self-pityingly, and my sponsor at the time said, I told her, you know, I feel like my whole life belongs to AA. All I do is go to work and go to meetings. And she was like, that's true. Your life does belong to God in AA. That's true. Like, she had no sympathy. She was like, whatever. And then she hung up. So here's what happened. Right around 2.5 years of sobriety, my ex-husband and I, it was over. I had my own place. I had a new career. I was making money. My son was thriving. He was in high school now, about to graduate. And he decided that he wanted to go to the army. And I was going through the steps again because I was absolutely crazy. I was $68,000 in debt. I wasn't paying my bills. I wasn't filing my taxes. I was dating two people at the same time, and I accidentally got engaged to two other people. But that's a whole other story. And I just couldn't figure out why I can't sleep. And how come I'm not happy, joyous, and free? And turns out, the three times I did the steps, I missed some things because I'd been taken through this other way, and it wasn't through the 12 steps out of the big book, so I didn't do a fear step properly, a fear inventory, and I didn't do a sex inventory properly. And in my experience, I missed a lot of things, not because I was trying to weasel out. I just didn't know. So I was about to like end it all again, and all my fear came back. And then this kind, loving woman, she took me aside. She's like, I know what's wrong with you. You just have untreated alcoholism while sober, and you're walking towards a drink, and you don't even know it, and the train's still coming, but you're still on the tracks, and I'm afraid that you're going to drink and die if you don't do these steps. And I'm like, are you sure that's what it is? It's alcoholism? Because I think it's something worse. And she got so mad. She's like, what do you think? This is a fatal malady. She's from Texas. You're going to drink and die if you don't do these steps. And if you don't do these steps, I want to know. So I want to get insurance and collect all the money. And I thought, people said that she was nice. She wasn't nice. I had a hard time believing it because I had a little bit of success in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was going to 7 meetings a week, 7 commitments. I was in the busiest home group ever. And I still felt like I wasn't going to make it. I was in the middle of the herd. But she showed me the truth about step one. She told me the truth about my alcoholism, that I hadn't had a spiritual experience necessary to overcome alcoholism. So I got really willing, and she took me through the steps line by line, word by word, page by page, until I had that spiritual experience. And on step one, I saw the second half. I'm My life's unmanageable by me, even while sober. I knew I was powerless over Jekyll. I didn't know I was powerless over Miss Hyde, who I am sober. I just told you what I was doing. And if you'd asked me how I was doing in AA, I would say, fine. I'm doing fine. How are you? And I wasn't. Right around this time, I got to do all of step four, everything. All those secrets, all that pain, all that terrible, terrible stuff. I got to share it all and get freedom from it. I looked at that poor girl on the paper and I was like, no wonder she didn't make it. She couldn't. That Linda had to die off so the new Linda could be reborn. And once I saw it, that it's not my fault that I'm an alcoholic, really understand that from here to here, that's when I got freedom. And there's a book in the, there's a part in the book that says, where I was blind, now I can see, and Bill's story, and that's my experience. And then she took me all the way through step five, and then I saw all of that, and then I finally got to step six and seven, and a big weight was relieved, like all these character defects got removed, and a whole bunch stayed, but me and God are working on that, and like cussing and gambling. But you know, when you win, it doesn't feel like a bad thing. But anyway, that's a whole other program. Sorry, Cassie. Don't tell my husband. Oh, is this recorded? So by the time I got to step nine and I made all those 122 amends and paid all the money back, nothing could take away this feeling that I got from the 12 steps and the power greater than myself, that feeling of peace of mind. Financial insecurity finally left me. I only had $77, so that was hard to accept. But I had to sell my house. I got rid of all the cars, but I paid all the money back. I flew to places, and I drove to places, and I met people. To even one person from Lancaster, I even made amends. Two people from lots of people from Lancaster, I made amends to. All of a sudden, the memories were flowing back in. I dined and ditched at Denny's on Avenue I, y'all. It was like $8.75. I'm like, are you sure? They don't care. They're a corporate. She's like, you're going to make this amends, or you're going to drink and die. So I have my $8.75. I know we're almost out of time, but here's the miracle. I drove from my work in Westlake Village, California, all in the middle of the day. I just said, screw it. I'm just going to go to Lancaster. And I drive all the way, and here I am on Avenue I, and I pull in, and there's a guy smoking outside. I'm like, hello. And then I tell the girl, hey, I'm here to make amends. I'm in AA, and a long time ago, I died in ditch, and I'd like to make amends and make it right. And if I don't, I'm going to drink and die. She's like, okay. The manager's outside. He comes walking in. Have a seat over here in this little place where you sit, the booth. And I made my amends, and I paid the money back. And this is what he said. I have 4 years in sobriety in AA, and I want to say thank you, and you're welcome to come in this establishment anytime you're in town. And he said, bless you. And he said, you don't have to keep driving. You can pull in. I thought, how did he know that I pass by here and I never stop? Because I feel so much shame. And that was one miracle. The other one was, there was a guy I was dating. He was over at Edwards Air Force Base. I don't remember his name. I don't remember where he lived, but he had an accent and a broken leg. I don't know anyone more than that. So I told my sponsor why I needed to make amends, and she said, we're talking about amends now, and for freedom, and I don't think I really need to make amends to him. Like, he didn't really like me that much, and I don't know how to find him. I don't know his name. I don't know where he lived. I don't know anything. I don't know his friend. And she would not have it. She's like, I don't care. Write out the script. How did you harm him? Well, I didn't communicate very well that it wasn't working out, so I just changed my number and I moved. She was like, okay, we wrote it all out. That was a Tuesday at 3 p.m. She lived in Malibu at the time, so every Tuesday at 3 I would go there and write all these amends. It was a tedious process. Not believing in it, thinking it was like way over the top, but I said, okay, I'll do it. Put it in my purse. I go to a wedding in Ventura. I go to a wedding for my old coworker, and I take my AA guy friend, Because I'm not allowed to date either, by the way, I forgot to tell you that, because all those boyfriends and fiancés by accident. So I could only have my friend. And we're sitting there, and you know the wedding party they come through before the bride? So my friend is getting married, he's up there. The matron of honor comes down the aisle with her husband, and that's my person on my amends. The guy I need to make, the broken leg Air Force guy, is married to the matron of honor. And I was like, this thing is real. Be careful of the book. It just brings him to the wedding. Nudge my friend. I'm like, you're not going to believe this. That's him. He's like, okay, let's wait till after the wedding. So between the wedding ceremony and the reception, I saw him. She went into the women's bathroom. He was waiting outside the men's. So weird. And I just said, hi, I'm Linda. You probably don't remember me, but a long time ago in Lancaster, and you were at Edwards Air Force Base. He's like, I know exactly who you are. I was so like, and I had the script and told him the script, and he said, I'm so glad that you're not drinking. I was really worried about you. I searched for you because you were just gone, and I wanted to know how your son is. How's your son? I didn't know you knew my son. That was one of the last amends, because I couldn't find him for a while. And what it's like today, because of that arduous process, I told my old sponsor, like, I'm not going to make it. And she's like, you're not going to make it. I go, I can't do this. She's like, you're right, you can't do this, but you and your higher power can. You and AA can. And we got all the way through the 12 steps, and I made amends to my son. He took off to the Iraq war. He's home now. He's fine. He's, like, as best as he can be. But I got to be strong, sober mom for that son of mine who was of service in the Army as a medic. And he told me, Mom, I go out to 8 guys this week and none of them made it. Why am I even here? I'm not saving anyone. Doesn't it feel like that sometimes in AA? Like you're trying to help and they don't make it? I'm not comparing the two, but this is what I said, and I really believe it's from the higher power. I said, perhaps you're just supposed to be there so when they go home to their higher power, you are there for them on their way home. And it helped, and I made amends to my son in that day. And what it's like now, that was a long time ago. I had that spiritual experience that they talk about in the book where Bill felt like God comes to most men gradually, but his impact on him was sudden and profound. I had that experience at this restaurant in Malibu. My mind always was chattering. Blah, 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 blah. Never said anything nice. Blah, blah, blah. Just, you're not good. You're do this, you're do that. Oh my God, now you're really getting old. You almost fell. Those shoes don't match. Blah, blah, blah. It's exhausting. And then I crossed this threshold of the restaurant. It was my sponsor at the time, her 20th year anniversary birthday party. And I crossed the threshold, and it felt like time stood still. Like everything went quiet. And I just in front of me was the ocean, and there were these big potted palm trees, and they were just moving in the wind at the same speed as the ocean. And I would take a breath, and we would all like... And I was like, am I tripping? Have I really lost it? And then there was a guy over here, and he like gave a little wave, and I remember I turned around, I'm like, is he waving at me? I don't know you. Because strangers didn't really say hi. And then his mom was like, she waved, and I'm like, this is so weird. I get to the table, and I told my sponsor, I go, I don't know what's going on, and she goes, she's like, what's going on? I'm like, this is quiet. And she's like, yay. And it's been that way ever since. The obsession of the mind, that mind chatter that never stopped, is gone. I am able to hold on to it. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the power of the higher power, the spiritual experience. That part on the book that says it's just removed. Like, I'm not swearing off forever. I'm not, like, trying to stay away from a drink. It just doesn't even come to mind unless somebody's drinking or I have to help them pour it out. That's the only time. And so what it's like now is I met my best friend and my spiritual partner, my husband, Eric. He's sober. He's got 14 years, I think. 14 years. I'm very close with my son. My oldest son is 39 years old. I have a grandson. He's a year and a half. I have my own other little son, Matthew. He's almost six. He's my little sober baby. He came to me. He's a gift from God. Thank you. We try to start a family, and what I want to share is you can have tragedy and joy at the same time. We were pregnant with twins. They didn't make it. And I prayed anytime, like I get shocking news, I immediately pray on my knees. That time I couldn't, but I prayed in the hospital room. And after it was over the next day, there was this beautiful rainbow. And I thought, that's where my girls are. Madeline and McKenna are with God. We said hello and goodbye in the same moment. And all they knew was love, because I got to hold them, my husband got to hold them, and we were heartbroken. I'd never gotten mad at God. So we decided to adopt this little baby, and 4 years went by, and God said, it's time to stop working, the baby's coming. So I told my husband, God said, it's time for me to stop working, the baby's coming. He goes, how come he never tells me to stop working? I said, probably because you have less time than me. Two weeks after that conversation, the adoption agency called and said, we have a birth mother, they pick you. And 60 days later, we have our little boy. Like, we flew, we got him. And guess what he loves? He loves rainbows. And he's a gift from God. And that's what it's like at our house. It's a sober home. It's safe. It's peaceful. It's quiet. Our little son knows that I'm here tonight at a meeting because he thinks it's because I have a lot of friends. And I said, I do. Okay, I'm done. Thank you.